Welcome back to Root Canal Academy, and we are now in the first quarter of the root canal game, and in the first quarter, we are going to cover anesthetic, how do you fully anesthetize a hot molar tooth, and more specifically, a hot mandibular molar, the hardest tooth to anesthetize in the mouth. Secondly, how do we place a rubber dam? What clamps do you use? How do you place it? What's the trick? Because we always have to use a rubber dam. Always, always. Okay. All right, let's talk about anesthetic. And the first thing I want to tell you is when you're doing a root canal treatment, use enough. Okay, I think that general dentists, and just basically kind of what I'm finding out with when I lecture is that I don't think you guys are using enough anesthetic. Now, I was a general dentist for 5 years before I specialized, so I know sometimes I wouldn't use enough, and now people think I use too much, but I definitely numb them up a lot in the beginning. In fact, our motto is more numb is better than less numb, because an hour and a half treatment, the patient is going to notice and start to feel things if you only give them two carps. About 45 minutes into it, sometimes on a really hot tooth, they may start feeling things. So I kind of go off something called the three carp rule. On most cases, on a healthy patient, necrotic or IP symptomatic, I will give three carpules of anesthetic before I start the root canal. As long as they're healthy, their blood pressure is normal. I mean, everything is within reason. Even if they have higher blood pressure, I may give two carps of epi and one carp of a plain. This three carp rule I just found works fantastically. I just don't have the issues with anesthetic that I would have, I've had in the past once I have switched to the three carp rule. And I think that a big penalty is not giving enough anesthetic and holding back anesthetic. So that's the penalty in this root canal game. Let's talk about the maxillary tooth. Okay, the first thing I do on a maxillary molar or premolar is I use a 30-gauge short needle. I start with one carp of 4% septocaine with epi, and I do a buccal infiltration, and then I follow it with two carps of 2% lidocaine with 1 in 100 epinephrine, and I do that in the same with the buccal infiltration, just like the septocaine. But I'll save at the last carpule, I'll save about an eighth of the carpule, and I will give a palatal injection right kind of near the apex on every maxillary tooth. I give a palatal injection, and it hurts. The patient hates it, but I'm doing it for two reasons. I'm doing it because I'm placing a clamp that's going to clamp the tissue on the palatal side, and a lot of molars and premolars have, what do they have? Well, they have a palatal root. Maxillary molars have a palatal root. Maxillary premolars have a palatal root or lingual root also. And so sometimes if the lesion's on that lingual or palatal root, they're going to feel pain. A lot of times, if you don't adequately anesthetize the palate. Now it hurts, but I always do a little palatal infiltration near the root area, okay? So that's the maxillary tooth. I use a 30-gauge needle. I use one septocaine carp and then two carps of lidocaine with epinephrine, 1 in 100 epinephrine. And I do my buccal infiltration on basically 2 3/4 carps or so. And then I'll do a 1/4 carp or 1/8 of carp for a palatal injection. Mandibular tooth is slightly different. I use a 27-gauge long and I use three carps of 2% lidocaine with 1 in 100,000 epi, okay? And I don't typically use septocaine for blocks, for mandibular blocks, or any block, but I will use septocaine for any infiltration, okay? Except for palatal infiltration. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But for mandibular teeth, molars and premolars, I use the 27-gauge long because you need the longer needle to get back into the right spot when you do your mandibular block. And I use only lidocaine, three carps of lidocaine. When I'm working on maxillary anterior teeth, I will give the two-carp rule. It's about a two-carp rule because you just can't get really, you don't need three carps of anesthetic. It's usually a single canal. You're usually able to clean out the tissue fairly fast out of the maxillary anterior tooth. So two carps usually works. They're going to get a big fat lip with two carps, but 1 3/4 of it goes as in buccal infiltration, and then a quarter of it or an eighth of it will go for a palatal infiltration on the anterior, maxillary anterior. How about the mandibular anterior? What do you do? What do I do for when I do root canal on a mandibular anterior tooth? Well, I still do the tried and true mandibular block. I'll give a mental block with lidocaine or mandibular block with lidocaine. You can use an STA, single tooth anesthesia, the wand technique. I don't have that, but I've heard some dentists tell me that works really well to get a deep, almost an intraosseous type anesthesia for a mandibular anterior. So there's some potential with the wand. I need to check that out. Now, when I give a mandibular block, okay, I always give something called a Gal-Gates block. The Gal-Gates is very high up. I'm giving a mandibular block is more in the middle of between the mandibular teeth and the maxillary teeth, the molar teeth. If you put the needle right in the middle and the patient open wide, that's more of the mandibular block. The Gal-Gates is an injection technique that goes right. It's the same as a mandibular block, except for it goes really high, and you go right under the maxillary second molar cusp tips. That's where you put the needle, you place it in there, you find the ramus, you find bone, then you readjust it back towards the back of the throat area, just gently. I mean, you're on bone, you're hitting the ramus, you're hitting the bone, and you're readjusting slowly back, and you're injecting slowly on this Gal-Gates mandibular block technique, and you inject very slow. And it's about it takes about 10 minutes for the anesthesia to work. But the thing with the Gal-Gates is it's highly, highly successful. Highly successful. In fact, when I was in the Army, I went to an oral surgery conference in Maryland, and the oral surgeon said, if you don't remember anything about this conference, which I did not, which I don't now, I remember this. When you need to numb up, anesthetize a lower mandibular molar or premolar, use the Gal-Gates method. Use the Gal-Gates method. It works extremely well. And I believe he was talking about wisdom teeth extraction or molar extraction. So I do the Gal-Gates. You hit bone, and then you readjust back towards the throat. The thing with my thought is I give three lidocaine blocks right from the get-go. This is a hot mandibular molar. So I do three mandibular blocks in a Gal-Gates fashion from the get-go. I believe now I've learned that is a slightly controversial statement. So if you feel comfortable with only two blocks, then you give a buccal infiltration. That is fine too. If you want to start with a little less anesthetic, I totally understand. I just don't use septicane in my blocks, and I use three carps of lidocaine. I don't have any problems with paresthesia. I did with septicane, but not with lidocaine, and I get the patient really, really numb, and that's just something to think about and study. Septicane, let's just talk about septicane really quick. Like I've said, I do not use septicane for a mandibular block, and I do not use septicane for a palatal injection. I believe septicane can cause more frequency for paresthesia, and I believe septicane, because of the 4% concentration, can give a little more. If you give a palatal injection, I notice it's a little more sloughing of the palatal mucosa, causes a little bit of almost necrosis in a sense of the mucosa, causes the patient pain. Now, when I'm saying that septicane, I think, causes more paresthesia, that's a completely subjective statement because the literature does not support what I just said. Podgrill and Lennon say that there's just as much paresthesia with lidocaine than with septicane. So I just had a case in my office, I've only been sued twice. One was dropped, and the other was because of septicane and paresthesia of the lip, a little bit of the lip, and he won. Obviously, you can't do anything. You can't defend that. But I used septicane, and I stopped using septicane I had some friends that had the same problem with Septocaine, and we stopped using it, and we don't have that problem anymore. But that's a very subjective statement. I'm just throwing that out there because I don't think you need it. I don't think you need Septocaine in a mandibular block, and I will go through how I numb a mandibular tooth molar, a hot molar up in just a second. First, let's talk about pregnancy and anesthetic. What anesthetics are safe if you treat a pregnant patient and you need to do a root canal? Well, first off, the best time to do a root canal would be the second trimester, not the first and not the third. What if you have to do an emergency root canal during the first try or the third try because they're in so much pain? Well, guess what? You do it. You do it, and you're careful with what you give them. And we'll talk about the anesthetics that are safe. First trimester, the unborn baby is developing, so you have to be careful. Second trimester is perfect timing because the baby's is developing, but most of the structures are there and they're just growing in size. But third trimester, the patient's just uncomfortable and it's difficult to stay in the chair for an hour and a half. It'll be most likely a two-visit procedure. Anesthetics that are safe for pregnancy, what are they? Well, thank God, lidocaine and Sitnest, plain or with epinephrine. Lidocaine with epinephrine or Sitnest, or which is prilocaine, with plain or with epinephrine are category. They're safe, and they're safe for the pregnant lady. All the other anesthetics are category B anesthetics. In other words, they're known to cause harm to the unborn baby. So category B, okay? So that's something you want to be really careful of. Okay, let's talk about a hot mandibular molar, because I really think the rest of the teeth you'll be able to get numb and anesthetized properly if you use enough anesthetic. But the hot mandibular molar really becomes the toughest tooth to numb in the mouth. So what's your plan? What's your plan right now? And then I'm going to tell you what my plan is and what I do. And it works. It really works almost 99% of the time. Okay, here's what I start with. Remember, this is a hot mandibular molar. You can barely touch the tooth. It is so hot that you touch the tooth and they're jumping out of the chair with your finger. I start, now this is a presumed healthy patient. I start with 3 carpules of 2% lidocaine with 1 in 100,000 epi in a Gal-Gates block. 3 carps of 2% lido in with 1 in 100,000 epi in a Gal-Gates block. I make sure that I'm aspirating 2 or 3 times to that I'm not in any blood vessels. Ask the patient after 3 carps, how are you? If they're starting to get shaky after 2 carps, I'll wait. I'll come back a few minutes later and give the third carpule, the third mandibular block or Gal-Gates method after I've let the patient sit for a while. So you could titrate the anesthetic. You don't have to do it all at once. You can titrate. Once I give 3 carps of 2% lidocaine with 1 in 100,000 epi, if the patient's doing well, I will then follow up with 1 carpule of 4% Septocaine with epinephrine in a buccal infiltration right next to the tooth to be treated, the hot tooth. If it's 19, I'll just go buccal infiltration right next to 19. So that we're at 4 carpules right now, 3 in a block and 1 in a buccal infiltration with Septocaine. There's a study by Reeder, I believe, and Neustein. I think it's those two. They say if you give, along with the block, you give a buccal infiltration of Septocaine, it enhances the anesthesia on that lower molar. So that's why I do it, and it works. Also, by giving the buccal infiltration, I'm setting the patient up in case the tooth doesn't get numb so that I can do an intraosseous injection or a PDL injection. Because if you don't numb up the buccal mucosa and tissue, then the PDL is going to hurt and the intraosseous will hurt a little bit. So I want to set up the patient so I can go right to the PDL or the intraosseous if in 10 minutes they're not numb. Okay, so I give my 3 carps of Gal-Gates, I give 1 carp of buccal infiltration of Septo. I wait 10 minutes because the Gal-Gates is a 10-minute onset versus the mandibular block, which is a 5 to 7 minute onset. Another thing you can do if you give a Gal-Gates, you can have the patient open and close their mouth 20, 30 times. It helps get the anesthetic working inside there to help get quicker anesthesia. After 10 minutes, I have my assistant test the offending tooth, the hot mandibular molar, let's say it's tooth 19, with endo-ice. She'll test it with endo-ice and she'll see if they feel the endo-ice. If they feel the endo-ice, then they're going to feel you drilling and they're going to feel you pop into the pulp chamber. So if they feel the endo-ice, then I go right to a PDL injection and I will use I will use lidocaine or septocaine in my PDL injection, and I will find an area where I can really inject the anesthetic down in there. A PDL is an intraosseous injection. You're looking for fenestrations in the cortical plate around the PDL to inject some of the anesthetic solution to get into the medullary bone, okay, through the cortical plate. That's just what a PDL is. Now, I used to not do the PDL. I used to go right to the X-tip or the Stabenit, but I had an associate that worked for me that was an excellent associate. She would go to the PDL first before the X-tip or the Stabenit, and guess what? She had tons and tons of success. So I started doing that, modeling after what she did, and sure enough, the PDL works very well. Most of the time, after giving a good PDL where I find a couple areas all around the tooth where I had a little bit of an indentation in the bone, or I was able to get the needle in there along the PDL and I'm injected down into that area, I find that the PDL works well enough that I'm able to get enough anesthetic down into that medullary bone and into the nerve area and get more anesthesia. If I do the PDL and they're still feeling it when I'm drilling, I can then go to the X-tip or the Stabenit and do intraosseous anesthetic, okay? Then after that, if I've done all of those tricks and I start drilling and the patient's still feeling the pain, I will then give an intracanal anesthetic, and that works mainly by pressure. It's pressure anesthesia more than the actual lidocaine type anesthesia. But about five times a year, five cases a year, I cannot get the patient fully numb. Either I'm able to get in the pulp chamber, but then they feel every time I put a file down every canal, they feel it. So what I do in those cases is I'll just do a pulpotomy. I'll clean out as much tissue as I can. I'll do a pulpotomy or a mini pulpectomy. I'll just get all the tissue I can, and I'll place calcium hydroxide right on top of the left tissue, the leftover tissue. And that seems to work very well. I'll put calcium hydroxide on top, then a sponge and Cavit. I'll bring them back 2 weeks later, and sure enough, 2 weeks later, they're fine. I'm able to numb them up completely, and I'm able to complete the root canal treatment. Again, that's only about five times a year. I'll do a pulpotomy or a pulpectomy or a mini pulpectomy, and I cannot get the patient completely numb, and I'm just torturing them. And I tell the patient, look, this is the perfect storm. You came in with such a hot tooth, and the nerve is so inflamed. All these calcium sodium channel blockers and all these types of things, there's reasons I don't even explain to the patient. I just tell them it's the perfect storm. We can't get the tooth completely numb, so we're going to bring you back. We're going to clean it out, kind of clean out everything and put some medicine inside the tooth, bring you back in 2 weeks, and then we'll finish the root canal. And of course this happened on my kid's music teacher, and I had to bring her back 2 weeks later and then finish the root canal. Also, it happened on a cop, and he was very cool about it, that's just what it is. It's not really our fault sometimes. Although we tend to blame ourselves on these things. Hey, how about a maxillary molar? Have you ever had a maxillary molar hot tooth where you just can't get them numb? I have, believe it or not, even though the bone up there is very spongy and the anesthetic should filter right through, for some reason I've had teeth that I cannot get numb, some maxillary molar teeth. And what I do with maxillary molars is I'm giving the 3-carp rule for maxillary molars, pretty much 2 3/4 of a buccal infiltration and then 1/4 or 1/8 of a carp for a palatal. I'll just take septocaine and I will, if they're feeling it, I will give them a complete full carpule, another carpule of 4% septocaine with epi on the buccal infiltration. And then I will give them more lidocaine for palatal injection. Okay. Or I'll give another complete carb of lidocaine, and I'll save an eighth of it, and I'll give them more, a little more palatal injection to help get them more adequately numb. And that usually works on the hot tooth, giving more buccal infiltration and more palatal. Usually it's just they're wearing out anesthetic, or they have a high metabolism and they're just metabolizing the anesthetic. But the maxillary molar, really most of the time I'm able to get them numb. I did happen with a cop. I could not get him numb and he was feeling everything. And I've had that a few times where they just feel the apical tissue. You just can't get them numb. I don't torture the patient. I just place calcium hydroxide. I do a pulpotomy or a mini pulpectomy, or as much of tissue, remove as much tissue as I can. And I place calcium hydroxide in there and I bring him back 2 weeks later. And the patients usually are much happier because I'm not torturing the poor guy or poor lady. Okay. So calcium hydroxide is your friend. When in doubt, use calcium hydroxide instead of torturing the patient. And there, I do teach you how I place calcium hydroxide and what calcium hydroxide to use in the, I believe, the third quarter, okay? Although I'll just tell you right now, I like UltraCal XS from Ultradent. It's a pre-mixed calcium hydroxide. It's in a syringe. You put a tip on it, and I like to gently place the tip to about 3 to 4 millimeters from working length and make sure it's loose in the canal, and very slowly and gently inject calcium hydroxide all the way out, and you can fill the whole canal. It doesn't have to go perfectly to working length. Okay, so that's how I do it. Just giving you a little bonus there. Now, okay, let's talk about coach's corner and patient management, okay? Sometimes patients are difficult to manage, and even though you've explained everything, it's going to take an hour to an hour and a half for the root canal. It may take 2 visits. Patients sometimes get very angry when you don't finish their root canal. And you know what? Sometimes we just do the best we can under the circumstances, and the patient's just got to be, it's just a jerk. And that's just what it is, you know, and that's unfortunate. But you're going to run across those patients. I'm sure you do it every day in your practice. Okay, that was anesthetic. And I hope that gave you some clarity and helped you perform better root canals. And we're going to now talk about rubber dam. Very exciting first quarter here. Anesthetic and now rubber dam, and how to place a rubber dam, and just all the nuances of the rubber dam, okay? Mainly, I want you to know, according to Steve Cohen, rubber dam is the standard of care. Lawyers are going to ask you if you use a rubber dam. The sad thing is, only 44% of general dentists use a rubber dam for root canal treatment. The majority of general dentists do not use a rubber dam for their root canal treatment. Okay, and I think part of it is because they've been out of school so long, they forgot how to put one on, they don't even have the right equipment, and they don't have the right clamps. So we're going to go over that part of it. So I want to make sure that you're comfortable putting a rubber dam on. I want you to put a rubber dam on every time. And here's what I tell the patient. You have to tell the patient you're doing something. You can't just stick this big rubber dam or dental dam on their face and not tell them what you're doing. I tell them, I am placing a dental dam to keep the tooth clean and dry. That's all I tell the patient. Hey, I'm placing this dental dam to keep the tooth clean and dry. And that's, they don't seem to care. As long as you explain that you're doing, why you're putting this on, they seem to understand and not ask any more questions. I used to explain all these deep thoughts of why it's important to place a dental dam to keep the bacteria of the saliva from running into the canal that we're disinfecting. The patients didn't care. They didn't care. So now I just keep it real clean, real short and sweet. I am placing a dental dam to keep the tooth clean and dry, okay, which is the total truth. Now my assistants are so good, they place the rubber dam for me. So now they say it, which is really nice. You can also say, we use a mouth rubber because we always practice safe dentistry, okay? Obviously, that's a joke. I would never say that, but that was one of my friends came up with that. So now, why use a rubber dam? I don't understand. Why are you telling me here, Reed, that we have to use a rubber dam? Well, number one, safety. Safety. You're going to be using bleach inside that tooth, and you want to keep the bleach inside the tooth and not in the mouth. Number two, you're using all these hand files, and you've got to be careful. If you drop a file, a hand file, it could technically go down the throat, and that's happened before. I drop hand files all the time. mainly on the patient's glasses. We use safety glasses on the patient's eyes, mainly for the microscope light and because I drop files all the time and it hits them right in the glasses. So you have to be careful. They drop a file in the mouth and they swallowed it. Number two is focus. When you put a rubber dam on, you're able to focus on the tooth, the treated tooth at hand, and really get a good focus, and you're able to be more efficient because you're moving the lips and the tongue away. You're kind of reflecting them away with the rubber dam, and you don't have the tongue moving in, and you don't have to block the tongue with your hand. You free up a hand, and you free up your hand for the mirror so you can see, adequately see what you're doing inside the tooth. Also, lastly, using a rubber dam gives you an increased rate of success. The studies show that if you don't use a rubber dam, the failure rate is higher. Okay, so it's important to use a rubber dam. Now, if you have to watch the videos, the lecture videos on the rubber dam to get the most out of this, but I do use a rubber dam frame, like a U-shaped frame. It's plastic, and I put the rubber dam flush at the top. It should be flush with the frame, okay? And we will, when we cut the hole, the hole is not cut far from the center of the rubber dam. So if you're going to work on the right side, you're going to just cut the hole just a little bit off center on the right. If you're going to work on the left, you're going to cut it just off a little bit off the left, okay, off the midline of the rubber dam, okay? Now, a maxillary incisor, I punch the hole about 1.5 inches from the top for a maxillary incisor. If it's a mandibular incisor, I punch the hole 1 inch from the bottom of the frame. Okay, 1 inch from the bottom of the frame. And again, if it's a left tooth, it'll be just slightly left of the center, the midline. Okay. If it's a maxillary premolar and molar, I will punch the hole, guess what? 1.5 inches from the top. Okay, of 1.5 inches from the top of the frame. And if it's a right tooth, I'll be punching the hole just slightly to the right off center, off the midline. A mandibular, premolar, and molar, I will be punching the hole 1 inch from the bottom of the frame. And again, if it's a left tooth, just slightly left off center. So the great news is for all mandibular teeth, you're going to punch the hole 1 inch from the bottom of the frame. From all maxillary teeth, you're going to punch the hole 1.5 inches from the top of the frame and just offset from the midline to whatever side the tooth is on, okay? Another thing I do is if it's a right tooth, I will put the frame on, the rubber dam frame on. If it's the right-sided tooth, a tooth on the right, I will relieve the right corner of the rubber dam, relieve that tension there. It'll help me place the rubber dam on. If it's a left tooth, you're going to put the rubber dam on, relieve the lower left corner of the rubber dam. Just take the rubber dam off the tines, and it'll put less pressure when you're placing it in the mouth, okay? It's important that you cut the hole in the correct way because you want the rubber dam to cover the teeth and cover the lip but not cover the nose. If you do place the rubber dam and it covers the nose, part of the rubber dam covers the nose, big deal. You can take scissors and you can form a semilunar pattern, and you can just cut a small semilunar pattern right under the nose so they can breathe, but the rubber dam still stays above the lip and keeps and covers the teeth. Because if the rubber dam's below the teeth, when you file with your hand files, you'll see saliva from the maxillary central incisor get on your fingers every time you file the tooth, like a lower molar tooth. Okay, so you want to make sure you cover the lip and teeth, the upper lip and the upper maxillary teeth, okay, with the rubber dam. So how do you place a rubber dam? Okay, how do I do it? Well, I'm a little bit old-fashioned. I first place the clamp on the tooth in question. I take the back part of the clamp. I check it with my finger. I lift up with my finger on the bottom to make sure the clamp is sturdy and that it's not going to come off. If it's solid, then I'll put the rubber dam over the clamp, and I'll go one tooth forward from the tooth we're going to treat, one tooth forward, and I'll floss it through. So basically two teeth are showing. And the reason I like to go one tooth forward of the tooth that I'm treating is I want to see the mesial contours, because most perforations occur in the mesial, in a mesial angle. And I want to see the mesial contours of that tooth that I'm going to access, just to make sure that I'm in the right spot, that I'm not going too far mesial or too far distal. So it helps me see the mesial contours. Okay. Yes, sometimes I do place the clamp and rubber dam together, okay, together, all in one shot, and that a lot of that time it's on a number 2 or number 15 where you're really having trouble getting the rubber dam over the clamp. If you already place a clamp on tooth number 2, tooth number 15, the upper second molars. Sometimes on a number 2, you put the clamp on. Let's say you just put the, you do the old fashioned way, like I do it. I put a clamp on and I can't get the rubber dam over the clamp because the bone's in the way. Okay. There's some bone in the way. And so what I do is if it's a right sided tooth, I have the patient move their lower jaw to the right. That's all they do. And when they do that, it opens up a little bit of space and I slide the rubber dam right over the clamp. Okay. So that seems to work a little bit. And it seems to work. Now, let's talk about the different clamps. I try to make this as easy as possible and have as few clamps as possible. And so there's not that many clamps that I use on my cases. And here's the best thing. All anterior teeth, so that would be 12 teeth in the mouth. You've already taken care of 12 teeth with the number 9 clamp. The number 9 clamp is a clamp that has wings, and this is the only time that I will put the clamp, majority of the time, I will put the clamp in the rubber dam, I catch it on the wings, and I will place on all anteriors the clamp and the rubber dam together, only because the number 9 is such a huge clamp, it's a giant pain to try to get the rubber dam over. So I put on all anterior teeth, I put the clamp and the rubber dam together, and that's a number 9 clamp. All right. For the most part, on all the rest, I place the clamp first and then the rubber dam over the clamp. Okay. All premolars, upper and lower, I use a number 1 clamp. Okay. So now we've just taken care of eight more teeth. With the number 1. So far at 20, there's 32 teeth in the mouth. For 20 teeth, we've used 2 clamps. The number 9 clamp for all anteriors and the number 1 clamp for all premolars. All maxillary molars, I will use a 12A or a 13A clamp. The 12A goes on the left maxillary molars. The 13A goes on the right maxillary molars. Okay, so that's pretty much 1 clamp for all maxillary molars. All mandibular molars, I use a number 56 clamp for all mandibular molars. It is a fantastic clamp. It's gentle to the tissue. Sometimes I can use a 56 clamp for all maxillary molars also. If you want to make it real simple, just buy a 56 on all and you can use it for all molars. Although I do like the 12A, 13A just a little bit better. What about prepped molars? Molars that have been prepped and have a temporary crown on there, and you find after the temporary crown's placed, the patient continues to have pain, and they have an irreversible pulpitis, symptomatic tooth, vital tooth that's very hyperemic and inflamed. You have to do a root canal, but it's prepped. Number 14, the number 14 clamp works very, very well, and that'll fit usually. Now, sometimes the clamps get wide. After use, they start to widen out a little bit. If you're strong, if you can do this, take your fingers and clamp and put the clamp together as tight as you can. If you can't do it with your fingers, then use a tool. But what you want to get the clamps back to their tight original contours and with a lot of tension, okay? So all prep molars, I use a 14. And all molars that have no retention, like I'm getting desperate here, I will use the 14A clamp, and it's the real mean-looking clamp. It's a clamp you use to get when there's not a lot of retention. Sometimes the 14A works well with kids' molars because there's not a lot of retention at that age if it's a young molar. 14A works very well. So there's not a lot of clamps, that you have to pick up. Again, the number 9 for all anteriors, Okay, and the number 9 has the wings, the number 1 for all premolars, the 13A for the right maxillary molar, 12A for the left maxillary molar, the 56, number 56 for all mandibular molars, number 14 for all prepped molars, and the 14A for all molars that need that extra retention. Okay? And can you access a tooth without a rubber dam? Okay, if you're a little nervous about accessing with a rubber dam on, can you do it? The answer is absolutely. If you feel more comfortable accessing a tooth without the rubber dam, then you do that. Once you get into the pulp chamber, just put the rubber dam on. It's very simple. I know that one of my associates has done this in the past. On some very difficult cases, they've said they've accessed without the rubber dam because they wanted to see all the contours. So that is absolutely fine. Okay. Once we place the rubber dam, we always use a bite block unless the patient says no. I don't even give the patient a choice or an option. The only time we don't use a bite block is if the patient protests and says, I can't do it. Then we take it out and say, just open wide when we're working, and then you could rest a little bit when we're out of your mouth, okay? So the type of bite block that I really like and recommend is called the new NU bite block. New bite block, and it's a styrofoam-coated bite block. And it's the perfect size. It's not too big, not too small, but I love the size. In fact, when patients complain that it's too big, I tell them it's the kid size. This is the kid size block. And that seems to work very well and keep them quiet. It's a single use block, and it costs $40 for 100 blocks. Okay, so if you bought, I mean, you're probably, it depends how many root canals you do in your office, but this will last you for a bit of time, okay? Let's talk about halftime. That is the end of the first quarter. I'm sorry, the first quarter. And I thank you for your time. I hope that was clear. And I hope that helped you with anesthetic. I hope that helped you put a rubber dam on. And I hope the pregame helped you with diagnosis and accurate case selection, and that this allowed you to be better tomorrow. Thank you so much.